Big show for you here today. It's a special bonus edition of the pod. Justin Boone joins me to recap the final game of the 2025 fantasy season. That's right. We recap Monday Night Football. Falcons upset win over the Rams. We talk about our lessons learned from that game. And then we quickly transition into some year-end awards. Who are the fantasy rookie of the year candidates? Who is the worst pick, the best pick, fantasy football MVP? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because we have done it. We have made it. It is the end of fantasy football season, and joining me to talk a little ball. Yes, for the first time all season, I'm not alone here after a primetime game. I'm not talking to myself. I've got my guy, Justin Boone, here. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
I'm not going to lie. I wish you were talking to yourself right now. This definitely feels weird to drag me out post a Monday night game, but it's a big one, right? This is the end of the main fantasy season, and there were a lot of interesting situations tonight. I mean, this game, we thought there was going to be some big performances. There was basically one big performance in this contest, and it probably swung a lot of fantasy matchups, and I guess we're going to talk about it right now off the top.
Well, just before we get into the game, I got to know about you personally here. Did you have any big matchups that were decided tonight? Anything that kind of came down to it, whether it went in your favor, whether you know, it went against you? How did it go here for you?
Well, that's probably why I'm smiling right now. I'm in a lot of analyst leagues, as I'm sure you are. And I had one finals tonight where I was going up against our buddy Danny Kelly from The Ringer. Great dude. Love Danny. He had about a 35-point lead on me, something in that range, and I had Bijan Robinson, Kyren Williams, and Kyle Pitts going. I felt great about that before the game, and, you know, the end of the first quarter, I started to sweat it a little bit, right? It was like Kyren, Pitts, they're not really doing anything, but then Bijan Robinson just decided he was going to win it all by himself for me, and he came up with more than enough points for me to take it home, and all Danny sent me was just gulp after the 93-yard touchdown that Bijan had. And it was over from there. So, yeah, it was an exciting one. It was a fun way to end the fantasy season. Ended up taking home only two titles this year, but two titles when I'm in as many leagues as I'm in, you're bound to win some, right? So it's actually not that great of a winning percentage, but it makes sure that every year I'm at least winning one or two titles.
Yeah, that's all that we can ask for here. If you're in, you know, as many leagues as you are, as I am, like, you, as long as you take down a couple, which same for me. I had two wins this year as well. And I was in about, looks like eight redraft leagues this year. One a dynasty league as well. So, you know, just like that, that's all you can take. Okay, like that's fine. Well, I'm not asking to win all these leagues, just asking to get a couple of championships. But luckily for me, not that you asked, but luckily for me, all of my decisions were wrapped up by this evening. So I didn't actually really have to worry about this game from a fantasy standpoint at all. We were pretty much like what was settled, whether it was wins, losses, whatever, we went into it. But yes, it's the end of the fantasy football season here. The end of the calendar year, we're going to be flipping to 2026, is on Wednesday. However, again, this is the end of the fantasy football season. So what we're going to do here tonight, we are going to recap Rams and Falcons, and then Boone and I are going to share our 2025 fantasy football awards for this little special bonus pod here. So let's get into it. Let's talk about the game that just wrapped up here, and it was an absolutely wild one. We've got Falcons 27, Rams 24. It really does feel a little bizarre to not be talking to myself right now. I'll be honest with you here, Boone. I'm glad that you're here. I'm actually thankful. I've kind of been craving somebody else to be here on one of these primetime recaps because I feel like a lunatic sometimes doing these, but it's going to take a little bit of a different muscle stretch here to get into this. But always kind of start with the winning team here usually, and that is obviously Atlanta here. They held on. At one point, they were up big. You had to get those kind of 28-3 jokes off. Saw plenty of that on Twitter. Joe Buck said it during the game as well. But they hang on here. They ultimately win by a field goal, and it really was on the back of not just a great defensive performance, 100%. We got to talk about that defense and what they did to Matthew Stafford, but it was Bijan Robinson being, I mean, the best player on the field. Raheem Morris says it all the time. He thinks, they think that he's the best player in football. When he puts on a performance like that, kind of hard to disagree. 22 carries for 195 yards and a touchdown, 8.9 yards per carry. He also chipped in with a team high 8 targets, five catches and had 34 yards and a touchdown through the air as well.
Well, not to spoil anything, but I'm going to a little bit. On Tuesday, my top 50 very, very, very early rankings for 2026 comes out. And over the next few weeks, 50. I'll expand it all, but we're not wasting any time. Tuesday, the first top 50 is top going 50. Up. And guess who is the number one guy on that list for 2026? It's Bijan Robinson, right? Like, the guy is fantastic.
Oh, I love it.
Top four fantasy back each of the last 2 years. And you just see it in a game like this, right? Like, the talent, the way he moves out there, just so comfortable, such a great athlete, such a phenomenal football player that I don't know that they're wrong. He is definitely up there in the conversation for best player in the league, for best fantasy asset in the league. And this is one of those performances that just kind of proves why. And I hope we continue to get a lot more of these into next season to prove that number one ranking accurate, which I'm hoping to keep him there throughout the offseason.
Oh, I love that ranking. By the way, top 50 is absolutely insane. I'm doing a wide receiver exit interview piece. I don't know if you have to do any of these exit interview pieces for the website this week.
I don't.
Positional, anything like that. Well, good. I mean, you're doing a top freaking 50. I think you're doing enough, pal. So I got to do like an exit interview piece for the wide receiver position, kind of recapping it. And one of the requests from our fearless leader, Jason Klobaka, the head editor here, he's like, hey, we need your top 24 wide receivers for next season. I was like, I'm not doing top. Top 24 wide receivers too early. I'll maybe give you 15. Maybe we can bargain to 20. And Boone's out here being like, no, I'm doing a top 50 overall ranking. Harmon's the biggest baby in the books here. So I think that's peeling behind the curtain of what the cast is here on the
next week. Give me 1 week and I'll have the full rankings out for 2026. We won't have rookies in there yet. We're still kind of trying to piece together free agency stuff, right? You kind of got to do some guesswork on how guys' values could change in free agency. So it's very early, obviously. It's a fun exercise, and it just starts to give people an idea of what things might look like when we get to the summer, when we get to draft season next year. And I think the earlier you start on this stuff, that's how you get these edges. And we're looking for just any little edge you can get throughout the year. And if you follow along all off season, by the time we get to the summer, you're on top of everything. And Harmon and I, we keep talking about, you know, this is the last episode in terms of recaps and stuff. We're not going anywhere though, right? We're recording another show later this week together. We're going to be recording episodes all throughout the playoffs and into the off season. So there's no rest for us. We're going to keep going, but that's how we kind of help people try to win their fantasy leagues. It is a 12-month process. It doesn't just start in August. And it's a weird time of year right now where you feel like it's over and it's exciting that it's over, but it's also sad that the main fantasy season is over because this is the furthest we're going to have to wait now to get back to real meaningful fantasy games in the main fantasy season. But what a heck of a performance to finish the season off from a superstar like Bijan Robinson.
Yeah, and I love that number one overall ranking that you've got on him here coming into next year. He was a guy that I flirted with at times having as my number one overall player this year. I think I ultimately settled with Ja'Marr Chase, and Bijan was my number two overall player. And, you know, it's funny, like, I didn't want to tweet this during the game because it's one of those like little micro debates in the fantasy industry that, you know, nobody really cares about, but there was at least a talking point in the offseason and kind of early in Bijan's career that he just didn't make enough explosive plays. Like, he didn't have those big week winning performances, and then he, you know, rips off a 93 yard touchdown against a pretty good Rams defense as well. Like, they have issues in the secondary that we've talked about, but they've generally held running backs in check at times this year, and it's just one of the best players in the sport doing elite things. And I just continue to think there's even more that they could get out of him, Bijan Robinson. I think as a pass catcher, they finally started to access that. I love, by the way, just as a little bit of a, you know, again, micro fantasy football type debates and stuff like that, I love that the broadcast said that Bijan shouted out Arthur Smith as the guy who really unlocked his game as a pass catcher. That's just like a funny little twist considering Arthur Smith's one of the biggest fantasy villains. And that's kind of my other point about Bijan next year too. Tyler Algier's a free agent this upcoming offseason. Maybe he's back in Atlanta. I know he's really beloved there. I don't imagine that he's going to cost a ton to sign in the offseason, but you could imagine a team that maybe wants more competition at the running back position giving him a pretty decent contract because he's a good back, man. And that doesn't mean that they can't add more competition if Algier moves on in the draft or something like that, but he's just been a guy that's been a slight nuisance for Bijan managers around the goal line. If he's gone next year, again, that's just like another thing that probably pushes you to that number one overall ranking for Bijan.
Yeah, you look to try to find like these perfect storms where really talented players can get just a ton of volume. And next year is kind of setting up for him. Long way to go, like you said. We'll see what they decide to do. Algier, free agent. Kyle Pitts, a free agent. This offense could look a lot different next year, right? We'll see what happens. But you look at the talent and you just kind of wait and think about like Saquon Barkley. He had some good seasons, but then he goes to the Eagles and it ends up being that perfect storm where you have the offensive line, you have the talent around him, and all of a sudden he goes nuts and has one of these 2,000 yard seasons. I definitely think that's in the future for Bijan Robinson. He's going to have one of these or multiple just massive, massive years where he's the guy that just breaks fantasy. And it might be 2026, but maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here, Harm. Just other things from this game to discuss, right? Including Kyle Pitts, who had been playing very well, had been having great games, was a fantasy hero until we get to this week. And we were worried that potentially Drake London gets a little healthier. Coming back from that PCL injury, really didn't do much in the last game. So maybe this week, Drake London would have a bigger game and that would push Kyle Pitts back. It wasn't Drake London. The Rams just shut him and Drake London down. And I think decided someone else is going to have to beat us. And that someone just ended up being Robinson.
Yeah, I really don't know how much of it was anything that the Rams defense did. I mean, they definitely had some pressure on Kirk Cousins that destroyed some plays at times. But it was just really one of those situations where when your quarterback throws for 126 yards, you're not going to have you're going to be lucky if one pass catcher has a good game. And obviously, like I said, the team leader in receiving is David Sills with 37 yards on three catches. I mean, that just is not like a productive passing environment. So that's going to be the interesting thing about Atlanta next year is just like what does the quarterback situation look like? What does, but by the way, can we, speaking of things we're leaving behind in 2025, can we leave these freaking Drewski memes behind as we're showing on the screen right now in 2025? They're like the least funny thing that is on the internet right now. That's one of my many axes to grind with fantasy Twitter. We've got to leave this meme behind in 2025. Like, copy pasting somebody to some random internet streamer, whatever, who I barely know exists. Anyways, that's my little side rant. But yeah, I think in this particular game here, Kyle Pitts, we didn't see the big game. We certainly did not see it out of Drake London. I wonder how much Drake London was out there just essentially being the decoy, and they saw something that, hey, Bijan's going to be the guy that wins this game. I think that's pretty much what I would imagine here. Again, for the Falcons, they win this game. They're obviously not going to the playoffs. However, them winning this game does matter for the rest of the NFC South, because if they win this week and then they win again next week against the red hot Saints, who right now might be the best team in the NFC South. I mean, I think there's an argument to say that they're playing the best football in this division right now. Even if the Panthers lose to the Bucks in week 18, if the Falcons win next week, the Panthers still win the division because of some tie-breaky stuff here. So like every game does still matter here. There's something at stake when it comes to these weird little tiebreakers here.
I thought you were going to talk about next year's draft pick and how it could impact.
Oh, there's
that,
also that,
right?
Too.
Which, like, as I watched the Falcons pass rush out there just getting to Stafford all night and creating havoc, it was like, I wonder if this makes them feel a little bit better about the fact that the Rams are going to have that first round pick next year and they're not going to have it, even though it's going to be a decent pick. And I don't know if they would go back. I think that they would probably go back on that trade. Maybe not. They would never admit it. But the defense was creating havoc, and this is what they wanted. They wanted that pass rush that could get after quarterbacks, and Matthew Stafford is not one of these guys that gets frazzled in the pocket, and yet tonight they really had him uncomfortable. They sacked him a ton, and that was a big part of this game. It wasn't just Bijan Robinson. It was also that Falcons defense coming to play.
Yeah, and let's flip this over to the Rams side here and talk about a little bit about that Falcons defense and what they did to this Rams offense. I mean, this Falcons defense at times, early on in the season, I think before the Falcons kind of faded into irrelevancy, although they've had some nice moments here to end the season, can't take that away from them. I think at the beginning of the season, it was really one of the stories of the year that this Falcons defense was a completely transformed unit, and then they had that like random game where Bryce Young had 400 passing yards, which for Bryce Young is like a miracle that he has anything even in the realm of that level of productivity. I think it was kind of forgotten that, hey, this Falcons defense has given some of the best quarterbacks in the league trouble. I mean, we're showing it on the screen right now, like Drake May, Josh Allen, they struggled against Atlanta. Matthew Stafford now has seriously struggled against Atlanta. Obviously, as we saw tonight, they put so much pressure. They create so much havoc, both from a coverage perspective and on the front here. And to me, Boone, it's one of the things that if I'm thinking about this Falcons team, I do think it's probably time for a change in the front office. But with the coaching staff, I mean, Jeff Ulbrich has done such a good job with this defense. That might lend the coaching staff to getting another shot here, which would mean, you know, from a scheme standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint, offensively, I would imagine Zach Robinson comes back with the whole coaching staff as well. And I do think a little bit of stability with this Atlanta team might be a good idea based on the way this defense has played, especially.
Yeah, I mean, we say stability, and yeah, the coaching staff sticking around would give them that, but we still don't know what's going to happen at quarterback for them next year, right? Is Michael Penix going to be healthy? Who are they going to have? They've already kind of suggested that it might not be Penix next year. So there's still a lot to figure out in this offense, and I wonder how Falcons fans actually feel, because yeah, you got to feel great that they've had a couple big wins here late in the season, and yet I wonder if a lot of Falcons fans kind of do want a change. Like, I know the defense is playing well. Yeah, I feel like they probably don't feel confident that this is the coaching staff that's going to get them there necessarily. But I agree with you that I think after getting a couple really big wins, really significant wins, especially in primetime, that we're going to see this coaching staff back. And this is going to look very similar from that perspective. We just got to figure out some other pieces, like what's going to happen with these free agents and what's going to happen at quarterback.
So the quarterback on the Rams side here, Matthew Stafford, who, again, it was the MVP favorite coming into this game, was someone who has had a marvelous season, has been someone that, despite zero rushing upside to his game, has been a top-level fantasy quarterback. 4.58 adjusted yards per attempt in this game. That is easily the worst of his season so far. His previous season low was all the way back in week 3 against the Philadelphia Eagles with 5.79. And, man, it was just... Obviously, you don't know without watching the All-22, like, what are they doing from a coverage perspective? Are they really baiting him into some of these things? But this just felt a little bit like old Stafford, you know, like where some of the Detroit years where he was a little bit reckless. Some of the early Rams, his first season with the Rams when they won a Super Bowl, was a little bit more reckless than the guy that we've seen tonight. That was certainly a part of it that I think here, Boone. I also think that once we get down after Puka Nacua with no Davante Adams, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of supporting cast for this Rams team, which does not excuse Stafford. I'm not trying to say that, like, oh, he was secretly thwarted by, you know, the players around him. But just when they're trying to fight back into this game, you really feel like, oh, if Puka Nacua is not making a crazy play, they can't be doing all the cutesy 13 personnel stuff. And like, oh, yeah, let's really get that going, because they're going to get down to the other receivers on the depth chart. There's just not a lot there for this team.
Yeah, I mean, we did see Blake Corum leave in this game, so that sort of 1-2 punch at running back wasn't there. Though late in the game, Kyren Williams started to heat up a little bit. But yeah, when your leading receiver is Xavier Smith, it's kind of like the Falcons side, right? David Sills is the leading receiver over there. Xavier Smith is the leading receiver for the Rams. It's just a very, very odd night. And, you know, Puka ends up finding the end zone. So fantasy-wise, it's okay. It's probably not what people were hoping for based on the way that he's produced recently. But without having Davante Adams, this offense is very different. And you think about what it looked like when they had like a fading Cooper Kupp last year and just how they couldn't really get it going. And then they bring in Davante Adams and it gives that spark to the whole offense for most of the year. And now not having him the last couple of weeks, it's unfortunate, right? And you've seen a matchup like this when Stafford can't get comfortable, when he can't get in rhythm, he doesn't have that other guy to work with. I agree with you. Like, we were at times excited about some of these names that were on this team, the Jordan Whittingtons of the world, Kanata Mumfeld, and yet none of them have really stepped up. I wouldn't even say that Xavier Smith had that great of a game. He just ended up with the production tonight. But yeah, it's unfortunate for an offense that was humming for most of the season.
Yeah, he had a 36-yard reception. He had 67 yards on the day, did Xavier Smith, to lead the team. And, you know, Puka Nacua could have had a much bigger night here. DJ Humphreys, maybe him and Puka are not going to be on speaking terms after this game, because he had a really sick catch at the beginning, like towards the beginning of the game, that was wiped off because DJ Humphreys, illegal formation penalty, was lined up off the line of scrimmage, which is rather insane for a long-time veteran left tackle in the league, DJ Humphreys, like, not lined up on the line of scrimmage. That wiped off a big-time Puka play. And then the second one, I thought the holding call on Humphreys was at best. But still, a holding call on Humphreys wipes off a outrageous Puka Nacua touchdown. He does eventually find the end zone later, but this could have been a much bigger night for Puka Nacua. So if you wake up, you didn't watch this game, and you're listening to us on Tuesday, and you're like, only 47 yards and a touchdown on 10 targets, it was close to being a much bigger game for Puka Nacua than it was.
And one guy who I'm thinking, like, dynasty wise, is somebody that we've talked about. We talked about how good this tight end class was for the rookies, and, you know, the Colston Lovelands and Ty Warren, and, you know, we're seeing Harold Fannin really become a star. I thought that Terrence Ferguson was really good this season when he got opportunities, and we saw tonight, we saw him score a touchdown, had kind of these flashes. That's the kind of player in dynasty that I want to go get a piece of, make sure I have as many shares of him as I can in a Sean McVay offense where we could see him become something. We saw Tyler Higbee over the years was a decent fantasy tight end for different parts of it. I think Ferguson's a player who could be very interesting for fantasy in the future. So that's one to note in dynasty. If you can get him as like a throw in trades, he's a name that I think you should be considering picking up, because I think there's a pretty bright future for him. And tonight, I mean, we saw 2 catches for 54 yards, the touchdown, and he's shown already that he's a guy that can score, can have that nose for the end zone. So let's hope that continues into 2026 for him.
That's a good call by you. He ran 19 routes, so he ran around on 46% of the dropbacks, did Terrence Ferguson. Colby Parkinson did play more than him. He had 7 targets, did Colby Parkinson. Could have used that last week, Colby, by the way, catching 6 passes. Not that I'm bitter about that, don't worry. But, yeah, Terrence Ferguson is a guy, despite the fact he only ran those few routes, he had 18 air yards per target in this game, and that's something that we've really seen from him, the ability to stretch the field. He's a guy that they line up in 13 personnel, and they'll motion him out to be like an out wide receiver. In this game in particular, he played 13.8% of his snaps out wide. So like, he can be a real weapon for them. I do have him on one dynasty team, and man, I'm really excited about Terrence Ferguson. He is definitely somebody that I can already guarantee you. I'm not saying he's going to be the Tucker Kraft of this past year, where every fantasy analyst I knew that was sharp was on Tucker Kraft. We talked about him relentlessly. I don't know if he's quite that level of player, but he is going to be a big time talking point in the offseason by basically every fantasy analyst you know. So definitely get ready to see a lot of Terrence Ferguson hype in the offseason. Last question for you here before we toss to the next segment here, just to wrap it up on this game. Any concerns about the Rams as a real deal contender based on what we've seen last week? They're going to play starters in week 18 against the Arizona Cardinals, which makes sense. You know, they probably want to have a little bit, but McVay said we need to play better. Like the last 2 weeks, obviously they're coming off losses. This one was more discouraging, I think, than what they did against Seattle last week. But any concerns about the Rams as a real deal contender based on what we saw here tonight?
Yeah, some concerns. I mean, if we were doing the panic meter, like some panic, not going overboard on it by any means, because I do think they're going to get Davante Adams back for the playoffs. And I think this is a team with a lot of veteran guys. They can bounce back. They're not going to get rattled easy. They got a great coaching staff. So they're going to be able to get it all together. They're going to be able to come out strong in the playoffs. And really, like, there's some teams that are, you know, there's a couple teams that I would say kind of look good as potential contenders, but I feel like this is a fairly wide open year on both sides. So I could definitely see them get hot here and make a bit of a run, in part because it's a pretty veteran team, especially on offense, when you get Adams back in the mix, which hopefully he's going to be healthy and he'll be out there.
The other thing that is interesting, again, the fallout from this game here, is the Rams very likely end up, or maybe it's locked in at this point, but they're very likely going to be that 6th seed, not the 5th seed in the NFC playoffs, which means they'll have to go on the road to either Chicago or Philadelphia, which is just a much different task than if they had to go into Carolina or Tampa Bay in the first round of the playoffs. That will likely fall to one of Seattle or San Francisco. We will learn that, of course, on Saturday. So that does make the Rams' road a little bit more difficult. Obviously, they went into Philadelphia last year and gave the Eagles about all they could handle in the postseason last year, but still, just a much different test there if they're going to go on the road to one of those two teams as opposed to going to the NFC South nominal winner here.
Do you get what I'm saying, though? Even teams like that, like the Eagles, the Bears are pretty hot right now, right? Yeah. But like, you look at those teams and it's like, they're not like the Eagles are not the juggernaut that they were a year ago, right? Like, that is definitely a team that they can beat. And the Bears are still like on the rise, but I would not be shocked if they got upset in the playoffs by anybody. So yeah, I still feel like the Rams are going to answer the bell and they're going to show up in the postseason.
Oh, yeah, and it's worth noting, too, not only did they not have Davante Adams in this game, Kevin Dotson, their right guard, was not playing. I mentioned DJ Humphrey's name. He wasn't playing because Alaric Jackson, the starting left tackle, wasn't active in this game, too. So they could definitely be a much different-looking team in the first round of the playoffs than they were tonight. And, yeah, I mean, that is going to be the story of the NFL playoffs this year. I think I think it's definitely true in the AFC. I think it's still true in the NFC too, that we're not talking about any, oof, that is a juggernaut team. I mean, Seattle has flaws and they're currently the number one seed. I mean, San Francisco could be the number one seed based on what happens on Saturday. And that team definitely has flaws. They might have one of the worst defenses among all these playoff teams. So it's just, yeah, I think this year is going to be really exciting. It's going to be wide open. I've said it a lot on Football 301 with Nate that I'm not hiding the fact that I'm jacked up about this year's playoffs because of that, because it's very even. There's going to be a lot of parity and there's going to be some fun matchup based analysis to do every single week.
I wonder, and I don't want to just speak from like my own experience this season, but other than that team that beat Danny Kelly, which I would say is a bit of a juggernaut, I've won the title 2 years in a row in that league. I feel like most of my fantasy playoffs were quite random, like teams where I was the number one seed and felt good about. I got upset by 6-7 seeds in the semifinals, and there was a lot of that across all my leagues. So I wonder if parity was kind of reigning quite a bit across the board in the fantasy world as well, and that we'll also see that in the real life playoffs.
Oh, I think I totally feel that. I mean, one of my championship teams, I beat JJ Zacharyson in a league. Shout out to me. And we were texting about our teams. Like, I don't even think either one of our teams are really all that good. Like, his team definitely had flaws. I pulled Malik Willis off the waiver wire and started him because Lamar Jackson couldn't play. I ended up starting Bucky Irving, and I hated the fact that I was like, I got to start Bucky. I don't want to start freaking Bucky Irving. God, and you know, just like that was the team that won that league, you know, Bucky Irving and Malik Willis and, you know, some just random stuff in that particular league. Then I had plenty of teams too that I felt were 7-7 teams that just, oh, especially one dynasty team that I was like, I could have taken down the number one team. I just missed the playoffs by about this much, but one thing went the other way. It's just, I think that was the story of the NFL, and it was definitely the story of fantasy this year as well.
Yeah, and I think especially in Dynasty, people are too quick to look at their team early in the season and be like, I'm out of it. There's no way I'm going to win. Stick around. Yeah. Keep fighting until you are actually eliminated, because if you can sneak in there, you don't know what injuries are going to happen to other teams. You don't know which players in your bench are going to pop off. And if you can get in there, even if it's one of the last spots, you'd be surprised. I've won many a title in Dynasty leagues sneaking in that last spot and then making it all the way through because a couple players on my roster got hot. So I always tell people, don't decide that you're going to rebuild in week 4 or something like that. You got to wait until later in the season before you know for sure kind of where your team stands versus the rest of the league.
All right, so that's going to do it for the Monday Night Football recap. And we'll be back with more right after this quick break. Now, let's keep this conversation going here and let's dive into some of our 2025 fantasy awards here. I don't think we necessarily need to go here and crown a winner. I just kind of wanted to have options at every single position. We have a few, like, I think clear we can name a winner for some of these. Other ones, I just kind of want to debate some options here. So we're going to go back and forth a little bit. We'll throw this around. Let's start with Fantasy Rookie of the Year. And we were having this conversation actually on a call this morning, our weekly editorial call. Scott Pienowski is having to do this from an editorial perspective, give out some fantasy awards. And Scott and I actually were texting about it afterwards. Just, this is really hard to come up with a Fantasy Rookie of the Year. Usually, Boone, there's a clear cut. Oh my God, this wide receiver was awesome. This, this running back took home titles for people. There wasn't quite that guy from wire to wire in the offensive rookies this year, which I think is perfectly exemplified that right now the betting favorite to be offensive rookie of the year is freaking Tyler Shuck. The guy didn't even start a full season, and I think it's just perfect. Again, you can disagree with that being, and I think it might be a little silly for him to win the award too, but I think that's just representative of the fact that there's not been a guy this year, Boone, that is like wire to wire been this awesome fantasy football rookie this year.
Yeah, and some of that's due to injuries. Like, we saw some really good players kind of get going, like Omarion Hampton, and then he gets hurt and misses a big chunk of the season, and then he comes back and he's been really good. Like, if you account for some of the games before his injury and then after, double-digit fantasy points in 6 of his last 7, you just wonder, like, what could have been for his season if he didn't get hurt and he was able to be out there the whole time. I feel like maybe he would have run away with it. Cam Scataboo, I think, definitely in the conversation. The RB6 in fantasy points per game over his last 6 appearances, averaged 22 touches per game in his final 4 starts. So there were some guys like that I think might have been the ones that like just totally ran away with the award if they had stayed healthy for a full season or even close to a full season. But we only kind of got glimpses of them this year. I'm very excited about them for next year. But yeah, I don't think they belong in this conversation, even though they might have been the front runners if they had played a full season. And yeah, all the guys who are kind of in the running do have flaws, right? Like, I think RJ Harvey is probably like the number one dude here. The RB9 in fantasy points per game since week 11. That was when J.K. Dobbins obviously went out for the season. He had two top 10 weekly finishes even when Dobbins was healthy, though. He was like flashing in those games. He was finding the end zone occasionally, even when Dobbins was out there. The RB22 in fantasy points per game on the season because of the little bit of production that he had alongside Dobbins. And then obviously he's just gone off here since he's got the starting job, and he's been really good in the fantasy playoffs as well. So I think when you factor all that in, even though it was a bit of like a delayed launch, he's probably the dude for this one. But I'm surprised that like the Tyler Shuck thing seems so funny to me, because like to me, Jackson Dart has been better in like every way. Like Jackson Dart has been, and I did not think, I told you this when, as Jackson Dart's like star started to rise this season, I did not expect to be the guy that was like touting Jackson Dart as this amazing fantasy play. And yet I still don't think he got enough respect for what he did this year. QB8 in fantasy points per game from week 4 on, when he got the starting job, he has been a top 8 fantasy quarterback since then. 7 top 12 finishes out of his 11 games. This is a rookie we're talking about. And I know Konami Code, he's running out there, all the questions about the durability concerns and everything. But fantasy-wise, this guy was producing from the moment he was out there, aside from like the obvious concerning matchup when he had to go against Brian Flores' Vikings defense. Other than that game, you basically could have started him almost every week and felt pretty good about having him in your lineup. And I think he probably should be in this conversation, but I would still give it to Harvey.
Yeah, I do think Dart does deserve at least an honorable mention here. I think from a real life, like, why is he not going to win the offensive rookie of the year? It's because the team stinks. Like, they've just
oh, I forgot
dodged.
The Saints are really, yeah. really good. Yeah, I forgot the Saints are so
well,
good.
Well, I mean,
that's
they've been a lot. Listen. They've been a lot better since, I really don't want to become the Tyler Shuck guy, but they have been a lot better since Tyler Shuck has taken over the starting job. They have made a lot of progress there. But I just mean that the Giants have just gone nowhere this year. And look, and I'm not even defending the fact that Tyler Shuck could win offensive rookie of the year with the stats that we're showing on the screen right now, like 2,125 passing yards, 9 touchdowns, 5 picks. I think the Shuck thing has gotten a little bit crazy if he's going to win offensive rookie of the year. But again, it's just emblematic of the fact that nobody's had wire to wire success here. But from a fantasy standpoint, there's no doubt that Jackson Dart has had that closer to wire to wire success as a quarterback one. I think the fact that he missed some games, he didn't start a full season, that's probably why he doesn't necessarily belong. He doesn't win the award, but he certainly deserves to be in the honorable mention, as does Cam Scataboo, because you mentioned when he was out there, he was just one of the best. He was looking like one of the best picks in the entire draft from a fantasy standpoint. He was crushing it. He still leads all rookie running backs in points per game this year, so I think he deserves an honorable mention. But to me, I think the two finalists, you mentioned RJ Harvey, completely agree that he, like, basically sealing people's title hopes, being a top 10 running back, being a running back one once he took the job over. And I think getting better and better as a player every single week, showing pass catching upside, getting better as a true base down runner. He really did help people take home titles this year, even as people were concerned about, oh, is he going to be the lead back? Is there going to be a committee? Whatever. Didn't matter. He just was able to outlast all of that. The other guy that I think deserves consideration is Harold Fannin, who's the tight end 5 on the season right now. He's a top 10 tight end in points per game. He saved some of his best performances towards the end of the season as well. And a guy that, Boone, every single week on the waiver wire show, we're trying to tell people pick up Harold Fannin. He really took off as the season came to a close as well.
Yeah, it wasn't like the most consistent performance in terms of his fantasy stock. Like, he still had a lot of down games, especially in the middle of the season, but I am not going to say a bad word about this dude. Really loved him coming out. I think we might have talked about this at one point in the summer, but when I first did like my pre-draft rankings and analysis, I wanted to make him my number one tight end. I was like, look at the production this dude has.
Yeah.
He is going to make it to the NFL and be incredible. And then you look at, okay, everyone else in the world has him behind at least the other two guys. All right, I'll move him down. But I love this dude from the moment that I started watching his tape and saw what he did in college. And I drafted him on a ton of fantasy teams for Dynasty. So very happy to see him performing well. And I just think my point on him not being like the most consistent in terms of fantasy production this year isn't to put him down. It's to say the best is yet to come with this dude. Like this guy absolutely could get the volume that we want from those like elite tight ends. You could see him be that guy. He was that guy in college, right? Like we saw him have just an incredible statistical season to finish it off. I think he could be that kind of player in the pros as well. They could build that passing attack around him. So yeah, very excited about him. Certainly belongs in this conversation, but yeah, I don't know if the impact was the same kind of high as what you saw from somebody like an RJ Harvey or even a Jackson Dart at times where they were having like these elite performances a little more often than what we're seeing from Fannin this year, which I think he was top 12 in 7 of his 16 games, something along those lines. So it was like, you know, it was good, but less than half of his games, he was giving you that tight end one performance. But again, we're just scratching the surface. This guy is going to be so good. We should probably mention like Tedrell McMillan, I think also in this conversation, but maybe like a step behind.
Yeah.
14th most points among fantasy receivers on the year. A very good season from him. And none of this should be surprising. Like we talked before the season about how much we like this rookie class. There's a ton of players at every position that we thought could come in and make an impact and have great careers. Ashton Jeanty was like the top of the list. And he was the bell cow and he had some big games, but man, the Raiders were just so terrible around him. So I think when they improve that supporting cast, he's also the kind of guy that we're going to see have some really, really monster fantasy performances and probably some monster fantasy seasons as well. But he needs a better offensive line. He needs more talent around him. He needs a quarterback. There's a lot of things they got to figure out, and hopefully they start figuring it out this offseason. Luther Burden, who, you know, we're seeing come on late. Not that he's a guy that's in the mix for this one, but I'm just starting to go through like all these awesome rookies. I think Burden's going to be somebody that we'll be talking about all offseason long as a guy that's going to be a massive breakout candidate for 2026. Loveland, Warren at tight end, like we were saying, but we haven't even mentioned like Quinshon Judkins and Woody Marks and guys that really stepped up, were good fantasy assets, not necessarily guys who are going to win the Fantasy Rookie of the Year award, but these guys that are going to go on to have great careers, and they showed us they had a big impact even as rookies this season. And as rookies and teams or backfields that you weren't really sure about came out and had some good games and really looked the part. So excited to see what they can do moving forward.
Yeah, obviously, Ibuka got off to that great start, faded down the stretch, but maybe that's a little more consistent next year as well. Obviously, he does not belong in this conversation. And like that really is the story of this.
That just makes me sad.
I feel you.
The Ibuka mentions now it went from the highest of highs to now it's like, oh, man.
It comes with a deep sigh. Dude? And it's just so funny. Like, he's probably going to end up with 1,000 yards on the season. And it's just, again, full season stats really don't tell the story of how things happened. It's like, yeah, he had 1,000 yards as a rookie, maybe 6-7 touchdowns. What a nice rookie year. It's just funny how that stuff works. But my last point on this is just that was sort of the overall just tenor of this rookie class going into it was potentially a really deep group. Maybe it lacked in, you know, blue chip, high end elite stars at the position, you know, guys like Malik Nabers that we saw in the previous draft. There maybe wasn't one of those guys here. I think that's kind of what this draft class looks like to me after 1 year. And maybe those guys become stars in year two, year three. But it does feel like we got a lot of interesting players as rookies this year. Doesn't feel like we got that one true superstar. Let's move to our next category here, which is the worst pick of the year. And it's always one I hate to give out. I like to trend positive, but I do think we have a pretty obvious one here. And it's really not all his fault. It's Justin Jefferson, who was the wide receiver 2 in overall ADP. He went 1.03 in one of our big time mock drafts, and that's really where he went for most of the year. He was a top 5 pick. Now, I had him as my I had a CeeDee Lamb ranked ahead of him. But that was like as far as I was willing to go to like fade Justin Jefferson. So I actually, because of that, didn't end up with any Justin Jefferson teams this year. But because that's like, if you're going to put a guy one or two spots behind in your overall rankings, you're not going to end up with him. I didn't end up with any Jefferson teams, but it wasn't like to say that I saw this coming, which at this point, I mean, it's just been a disaster season for Justin Jefferson this year. I think it's the obvious pick, worst pick of the year here. Justin Jefferson is a top 5 guy in most drafts.
Yeah, you felt like he was just too big to fail, too talented in that Vikings offense that no matter what happened at quarterback, you figured Kevin O'Connell would get them going. He would be the quarterback whisperer. He would get something out of his QB to make him at least average to keep this thing moving. And we just didn't really see it this year. We saw Carson Wentz like come in and kind of give them a little something for a few games. But it really didn't happen for them. For J.J. McCarthy, Max Brosmer, obviously, when you get down to that level of your depth chart, you can't really expect to get much there. And you end up looking at it now, like wide receiver 39 in fantasy points per game is brutal in half PPR. 9.1 fantasy points per game in half PPR this year. Would you like me to read off some of his previous totals? 15.6 last year, 16.8 in 2023, 17.9, 16.3, and 14.4. So never below 14 fantasy points per game, and this year below 10 fantasy points per game, of course, in half PPR there, but just brutal and something that I don't know that anybody saw it coming to this level. Very unfortunate. I think another name could be in the running. I agree that I would give it to Jefferson. I think Brian Thomas Jr. at least deserves a mention, maybe an honorable mention here. Wide receiver 12 in fantasy points per game last year. Great rookie season. Over 14 fantasy points per game for him last year. This year, wide receiver 48, 8.3 fantasy points per game. Was the wide receiver 8 in ADP. So I know like Jefferson was going like mid to high end first round. Brian Thomas Jr., BTJ was like late first round, early second round of drafts. And it was like, you know, of course, if Jefferson wasn't there, I think he would be the slam dunk pick. But because Jefferson had such a bad season as the bigger name there, we'll give it to him. And I know BTJ missed a couple games due to injuries, but let's face it, that's not what the problem was for him this year. The issues with his production started way before that and have continued. So he's had a couple games, but overall, very, very disappointing pick there as well.
Super disappointing. Yeah, just real quick on Justin Jefferson. The two names he's sandwiched between from a points per game perspective is Parker Washington and Troy Franklin. Imagine telling yourself that in August that Justin Jefferson was going to be between Parker Washington and Troy Franklin in points per game.
You would have gone the other way. You would have been like, oh my God, Parker Washington and Troy Franklin are top five fantasy receivers. Like, that's incredible. Yeah.
And to that point, Parker Washington leads the Jacksonville Jaguars in receiving yards this year. All the talk about, man, Brian Thomas Jr., Travis Hunter. Nope, it's Parker Washington leads the team with about like 760 receiving yards on the season, leads the team with 53 receptions as well. And yeah, that just is perfectly shows like the type of season Brian Thomas Jr. has had. And I think the most frustrating part about Brian Thomas Jr.'s season is that there wasn't, you know, one thing. Right. I mean, when you look at Justin Jefferson, it's like, well, OK, we know what went wrong there. The quarterback situation did not go as planned. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is now having a career year in Liam Cohen's offense. And Brian Thomas Jr.'s role has been reduced to this like sack, basically a sacrificial X receiver in the offense. And I don't know what's going to happen with him next year. But, you know, there obviously were a ton of injuries. He probably came into the year a little bit banged up. He maybe came into the year, you know, I don't want to speculate about this stuff, but just maybe dealing with some things off the field. And it's just it just was one of those years that you're hoping you can flush down the toilet and he gets back to at least something close to the production that he had as a rookie. But man, you just look at this Jaguars offense right now. It just functions through so many of these other players a little bit smoother than it did with BTJ as the featured guy early in the year. And you do wonder what 2026 and beyond looks like.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to like what we talked about with the Lions offense in the summer, right? When you had all these different guys in that offense, you start to wonder like, how are some of these other guys going to be able to produce? And that's kind of the problem Jacksonville's having right now. And from a real life standpoint, it's great. They look fantastic. They're really rolling. From a fantasy standpoint, you look at it, you go, okay, this is a lot harder to project now when you have Myers and BTJ and Parker Washington doing something and Brenton Strange doing something and Travis Etienne having a great season, who I want to bring him up in a second here. But yeah, there's so many pieces in that Jags offense that, yeah, it's going to be very difficult for BTJ to put up the same kind of numbers that he put up as a rookie moving forward.
Let's get to the best picks here. Let's get a little more positive based on ADP from this year. I think we'll talk through some interesting honorable mentions. I do kind of think it goes to Christian McCaffrey here, who was a first round pick based on ADP, but he's just been so far and away the best player in fantasy football and is a guy that you did get at a discount. I mean, and certainly in more casual drafts, people are just going to come in here and say, I'm not taking this guy this year. So in a lot of your analyst league drafts, I mean, he went seventh overall in one of our drafts from this, our mock drafts from the summer. Again, that doesn't necessarily like, oh, he was RB1, he went seventh overall. That doesn't look like best pick material. Maybe he's more of a fantasy MVP contender. We'll talk about that award a little bit later on. But I don't know. To me, man, he's just giving you that insane value over the replacement players that he was taken around, basically against anybody else. I kind of think he wins this award here, but we'll talk about more interesting names in a second.
Yeah, I think it comes down to how you want to look at this award. And I feel like, yeah, I mean, he's been phenomenal. Like, I will make a strong case for him as the fantasy MVP this year, but he was still a first round pick. And I know the discount was there by a few spots, by half a round, but still, like, not everybody even had a shot at him. So it's hard for me to look at a first round pick and say, okay, that guy's the best pick. I feel like you got to
I think I was viewing it as like, just if you overall. Made this, usually I completely think that the idea that, oh, you took this guy and you won this league is like nonsense. You know, I do think for the most part, it's very overstated. It's classic like fantasy Twitter speak. All that really matters were these three players. I like completely disagree with that notion of playing fantasy. And I think if you play enough fantasy football, you see that that's not true. Like, you can build a really good team around a terrible first round pick. You can build a really crappy team around a really great first round pick. So again, I normally think that's silly. But man, it was pretty hard to lose your league if you had Chris McCaffrey this year. So that was just kind of my one, maybe the way I was viewing this award. But I think we can get into some more interesting names here who are value guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw out a couple. Like, George Pickens was going in like the fifth or sixth round, wide receiver 29 ADP-wise. Currently the wide receiver 6 in fantasy points per game and half PPR. 92 catches, over 1,400 yards, 9 touchdowns. It definitely helped that CeeDee Lamb was out for some of those games and he went off in those contests. But even when Lamb's been out there, he has been producing, right? Aside from the classic George Pickens couple games that he kind of takes off or gets in his own head or whatever happens to him once in a while. But overall, just a huge career year for him, and to get him where we're getting him. Again, like in that range of drafts that you and I kept talking about all summer long, from rounds like 5 to round 7 or 8, there were so many receivers in that range that we were telling everybody to target. Pickens was definitely one of them. So nice to see him come out. And then Travis Etienne, who I just mentioned, right? Like, we didn't know who was going to emerge from Jacksonville's backfield, but we kept saying, like, if somebody does get the lead back job here, takes most of the touches for themselves, they're going to be a pretty good fantasy back in that Liam Cohen offense. And I drafted a lot of Etienne and Bashaul Tutin teams, and I'll be honest, I thought Tutin eventually would be the guy that would take over there. Never happened for him. Etienne, the clear winner, RB10 in fantasy points per game, averaged 14.5 fantasy points per game this season. Just a total bounce back for him in this Cohen offense. And a free agent this offseason, like, Harmon, did he do enough here that you think they'll actually bring him back? Because at the beginning of the season, I thought, okay, it's over. Like, his time, he's got one more year there. Now I feel like there's probably a pretty good chance that they try to get him back on a deal and keep him in this offense based on the way he's played this year.
He leads the team in receiving touchdowns this year, does Travis Etienne. And I think because of that, that was something that was missing at times. Even as he was having this really nice season to start the year, he wasn't quite involved in the passing game, but that's been a real weapon in the back half of the year as they've transitioned away from, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. And obviously Travis Hunter hasn't been there, and it's been the Jacoby Myers, the Parker Washingtons, but it's also been Travis Etienne like popping off as a receiver. And that was something that really took Liam Cohen's Tampa Bay offense to another level when they got Bucky Irving involved in some of those screens, and, you know, Rashad White even leaking out of the backfield for plays as well. So I do think Etienne is somebody they could consider bringing back. And I think the lesson here from fantasy is just never run away from the ambiguous backfields. Always, we said this a lot in the draft season, like, take one of these Jacksonville backs. We don't know which guy it's going to be, but take them. Just take your shots. And he was kind of the one that was viewed as the boring guy, you know, even at times, like, could Tank Bigsby maybe take it over back in OTAs? He obviously is not even on the team anymore, but he was kind of viewed as that, the most boring of the options. But I ended up with a lot of Travis Etienne teams, one of them, a fantasy championship team, because it was just, hey, take shots at this backfield. I don't care what you think of the players. It's a long season. The fourth round hype bunny doesn't always work out. And Travis Etienne was the guy that worked out here. So that's clearly the lesson from this Jacksonville Jaguars backfield. Doubling back to George Pickens, man, I'm just, that was the guy that I said in my blueprint article was the one player I wanted to leave every single draft with. Did not accomplish that feat because it was kind of difficult to get George Pickens. And he was one of these guys too. And I don't know if you relate to this, Boone, when I'm doing my rankings, occasionally I will, you know, truly flag plant a player based on how I'm ranking him versus consensus. And George Pickens was one of those guys. You know, we talked all summer about, hey, those rounds 5 to 7 wide receivers. I had him ranked in a range where he was significantly ahead of those guys. I had him close to like Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill in my rankings. But I used to try to play this game sometime where I'm not going to totally follow my rankings here because I feel like I can get him later. And then you end up getting screwed. That happened to me a lot with George Pickens this year. So that's a lesson I want to learn here from this one, because he definitely was one of, without question, the best picks you could make this year.
Yeah, I think for me, I would want to give it to one of those two guys. I think for me, Etienne being like an 8th round pick, at least how I view this made up award that we have here, that is how I would approach it. We could also mention Chase Brown in this conversation, and like a bit of a rocky season, obviously, for him. Got off to a tough start. The schedule was an issue. You know, Burrow goes down. They have this bad stretch where they're facing a lot of tough defenses. He wasn't producing early in the season. I don't know about you. I got a lot of messages from people saying, you know, thanks a lot for recommending him. But, you know, RB12 in fantasy points per game on the season at the moment in the second half of the year, over the last 10 games here with Flacco under center and then with Burrow coming back, Brown, the RB3 in fantasy points per game, averaging 19.1 fantasy points per game. And then in the playoffs here, just goes off. Also the RB3 overall for that span, but averaging 23.7 fantasy points per game. So in the second half of the year, he was absolutely the back you wanted on your team if you were able to survive that first part of the season where we had some tough matchups. He wasn't really producing and we lost Burrow for a bit there.
I think that's absolutely fair. He's going to come up in our next category as Chase Brown, so I'll save some of my thoughts on there for him. But I think I'm with you on giving this award to either Travis Etienne or George Pickens here. I think that just makes a lot more sense considering kind of the spirit of the award. Even in the fantasy football playoffs, Travis Etienne, 18.3 points per game from week 15 on. So he was definitely money down the show. I kind of think it has to be Travis Etienne. Actually, the more I think about it, I think you're right to call him out here as the award winner. Let's transition to the next one here, the Fantasy Football Playoff Hero Award. I do think we didn't have him on the outline, but based on the game that we just watched tonight, I kind of think Bijan Robinson deserves credit for this award here. Points per game in from week 15 on, 29.7 points per game in weeks 15, 16, and 17. I think we got to consider him. Two other running backs to consider as well. Derrick Henry, 26 points per game from weeks 15 on. Of course, a lot of that came in one particular contest where he went absolutely nuclear in the fantasy championship. Still think that makes a pretty compelling argument. But the running back three behind those guys was Chase Brown, who, as you mentioned, just a reminder, baby, it's a long season. He was looking like one of the worst picks you could have made in that kind of third round range, taking him off the board as a running back 11, 12, anywhere around there. Well, guess what? He finishes the season as running back 12 in fantasy this year. And yeah, it's just like he ended up being exactly what you would have imagined. He was great in the final weeks of the season.
Yeah, I mean, just so good, as was Henry. The first week of the fantasy playoffs, I think he only had 10 fantasy points or something, which, again, isn't tanking your week, but nothing compared to what he did the last 2 weeks and then obviously in the final. The other guy I think we could mention here, Chris Olave. I know you want to talk about him, but wide receiver 2 overall behind only Puka Nacua in the fantasy playoffs. We'll see that. I did. That was before tonight's game with Nacua. I haven't run the numbers since then, but Nacua
he's 25.7 points per game. Yeah. So he is the top scoring receiver. Yeah.
And for Olave, you know, top 10 fantasy wide receiver each week in the fantasy playoffs, top 2 in the semifinals and the finals, just massive production. That was like, we just kept waiting on it, right? The targets were there. Mm-hmm. You know, you just wondered at some point, is he going to come around and start to have these really monster, meaningful fantasy performances? And he saved it till later in the season, but then they started to get more consistent. And if you had him in your lineup in the fantasy playoffs, you're probably holding a trophy right now.
Can confirm. I am holding a trophy because of Chris Olave. 23.7 points per game, as you mentioned. That was second only to Puka Nacua. Only the two wide receivers in weeks 15, 16, 17 to average over 20 points per game. So, yeah, he saved his best to last. He, of course, went against the Jets and Titans. That's going to help. But it's also going to help when you have the new best young quarterback in the NFL, Tyler Shuck, throwing you the football. So, shout out to Chris Olave, and thank you, Tyler Shuck. We appreciate your service. So, honestly, any of those guys, any of the running backs, any of the wide receivers that we mentioned there, I think could be that award winner. Let's go to the next category here and hit a little closer to home. Biggest fantasy regret of the year. I'll start this one off here because I love to beat myself up. Overdrafting year two wide receivers was a bit of a problem this year for sure. And it's not that some of these guys were terrible this year, but they were a pretty underwhelming group overall. And some of it is because of circumstances, but I've mentioned this on the show for all of the hype that the 2024 wide receiver draft class got. And I think a lot of these guys were really good as rookies. We're not going to get a single 1,000 yard receiver out of this group this year, which is crazy. And look, like 1,000 yards is a meaningless designation. It's easier to get now in today's NFL, whatever, but we're not going to get a single one of those guys. That's crazy. From a points per game perspective, the best scoring second year wide receiver is Malik Nabers at wide receiver 13. He hasn't played in freaking forever. He has 48 fantasy points on the season. He played four games this year. Like, you keep scrolling down the list, the next highest scoring second year wide receiver is Roma Dunze at wide receiver 25. Again, a guy that was great to start the year, had the fall off, played through injuries, and now hasn't played in a few weeks because of that. It's just this group ended up being a pretty rough situation. And I don't think Ladd McConkey gets brought up enough in this discussion as well. Like, we could talk about the pen meter if we want here, but wide receiver 37 in points per game overall looks a little bit better because he stayed healthy, but he was a pretty big disappointment as a second round pick, early third round pick, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, just overall a very disappointing season from a group that I think, you know, we had a lot of expectations for. We still probably expect that they'll get going eventually, but yeah, pretty big letdown of a year. And maybe that should make me think twice about the talk of, oh, Luther Bird and all these rookie receivers going into next year that we're going to talk about. We might have to really go over that, Armin, to question whether we think they're going to be the ones that are going to kind of buck that trend and go off and, you know, have a big, big second year. I feel like the rookies this season are going to have a good campaign next year, but yeah, it was
just because you brought that up real quick. And I've mentioned this on the show, you're going to see a bajillion tweets over the offseason about Luther Burden's yards per route run and how it relates to other rookie seasons. I said this morning. I'm not saying that this should change the equation. I'm very bullish on Burden, and I think we all probably should be. But it's just funny now when you're seeing those lists, two of the names around the top 10, it's Ladd McConkey and Brian Thomas Jr., who were by far two of the most disappointing picks he could have made this year. So I don't know if that will change the equation, but it's just kind of funny to look back, and as we're doing this Luther Burden hype train, which 95% of fantasy Twitter is doing basically all season and certainly these last few weeks.
Yeah, and Burden did even less as a rookie, so hopefully we're not pushing him all the way up there in ADP. And yet, not to spoil that top 50 that I did, but he's inside that top 50, Harmon. He is inside my top 20 receivers in the very early version of my 2026 rankings. So not to make this all about Luther Burden, but yeah, there's some reasons. Like, we could break down each one and kind of come up with different reasons why this happened. Like, the McConkey thing, I don't think it's just on him. There were issues in that offense. Yeah. There were other guys stepping up, but the offensive line really kind of changed the equation for that entire passing attack and that entire offense. And yet still disappointing for sure. Totally agree with you there. And for me, like, I don't know if we want to switch over to my side of this here, but I'm going to mention something I mentioned a bunch of times in the Seahawks backfield. And I don't want to put myself through this again, but I think I have to. I think I deserve it. I hyped up that Seahawks backfield so much in the summer, thinking that Kenneth Walker could have a career year, but also saying, like, draft both these guys based on where they were going, because you could get them both at, you know, decent prices. Have them both. Guarantee yourself that Seahawks backfield. Little did I know it was going to be one of the most frustrating situations. I should have listened to Scott Pianowski. He told me, he was like, no, I don't necessarily think you should be as in on them as you are. And you could end up in a situation where they're both just giving you production here and there. And it's not one guy going off all the time. I convinced myself it was going to be, and it has not been. It has been terrible this year. And even when you didn't expect them to come through, like in the Rams game, the Rams, despite what happened tonight, they have been the best defense against fantasy running backs this season. And we saw Walker go off against them. We saw Charbonnet have a decent game against them. Tonight, we saw Bijan Robinson have a good game against them. But for most of the season, they were very good against fantasy running backs. So even when you thought there was no chance they were going to have a good game, one of these guys or both of these guys would come through and produce for you, which it just makes it so frustrating, so disappointing, because it wasn't that they didn't get there at all. It was just they were those most difficult fantasy backfield to project all season long, and they certainly didn't help a lot of people make it to the fantasy playoffs or the fantasy championships. So I took the L on that one fairly early in the season, but I feel like I got to bring it up one more time here because probably my worst call of the season.
Zach Charbonnet, running back 27, Kenneth Walker, running back 29 in points per game. And obviously for Charbonnet, and I can say this because I ended up with a decent amount of Charbonnet teams. I didn't end up with very many, if any, Kenneth Walker teams. Rostering Zach Charbonnet was not that fun either. Like, he ended up finishing ahead. It was just, you're praying for touchdowns. He scored 11 rushing touchdowns on the year. It's just, this run game wasn't as healthy overall as we thought it would be with Clint Kubiak there. It was actually the passing game that ended up being pretty exciting. So, yeah, I think our takeaways there are, we'll see what the Seahawks backfield looks like next year. And I do kind of believe that some of these year two wide receivers can bounce back in year three. A lot of them. We'll have plenty of time to discuss that in the offseason, but I think this class did get very unlucky in that regard in their second seasons. But let's get a little more positive here. Let's move into victory lap of the year. Boone, because you just beat yourself up for the whole Seahawks backfield situation, what's your victory lap of the season?
I'm not one for really doing victory laps. I don't know if you've known. I don't do it too often, right? Like, I beat myself up about the things that I got wrong because I think it helps me get better. I don't know that like victory lapping really makes me get better in any way. So I don't want to spend too much time doing it. We don't have to spend too much time because it's a guy who we already talked about earlier, George Pickens, right? A player who we were recommending, who we were saying to everyone, rounds 5 to 7, 5 to 8. There was like 15 to 20 receivers in that range. And when you go over like the way we were talking about approaching drafts in the summer, it always involved taking 2, maybe 3 guys in that range of drafts and hoping that you hit on the right ones. One of them was George Pickens. Definitely came through, like I said earlier, top 10 fantasy receiver and fantasy points per game right now, having a career year. Another one is the guy that you're going to talk about here, right? There was just so many, but these two came through in some of the biggest points of the season. And yeah, it was the right move. That is one thing we could pat ourselves on the back for sure, is that hitting that range hard was a smart move for fantasy drafts this year.
No question, because you got some guys that were kind of whatever in that range, but you did get these two big hits, George Pickens and the guy that I want a victory lap here, Chris Olave. I'm with you that I don't like to thump my chest too much about certain things. It's like, sometimes if you could say that you get unlucky about, hey, like a guy like Ladd McConkey, I think got really unlucky this year. But you can sometimes say like you get lucky to get things right as well, or you get things right for the wrong reasons. The only time I really am willing to kind of victory lap something is a situation like this Olave one where, and we talked about it this summer, man, people straight up thought he like wasn't good. It wasn't just the concussions, which I also think is usually, if you're trying to predict injuries, look at the Christian McCaffrey thing, look at Chris Olave. These are two of the best picks this year. They were guys that, oh my God, they're going to get hurt. They're going to get hurt. Well, guess what? They did not get hurt. They ended up being two of the best picks in fantasy. That's number one. Number two, like I said, the only time I really want to thump my chest about being right about something is when a guy's legit getting dragged for not being a good player, which is where Chris Olave was at times in the fantasy football community because he didn't have those big games. And all that changed for him was, yeah, he stayed healthy. He's always been an awesome player. What changed for him is now he's playing in the best, the most well-designed offense of his entire career by far under Kellen Moore. And he has an elite quarterback now in Tyler Shuck, and he never had, no, I'm kidding. But he had a quarterback who he actually has some good chemistry with in Tyler Shuck, which is certainly not the case throughout the majority of his career. So that's a reminder for those year two wide receivers, as we label, sometimes we, the royal we, label a guy as this is what he is. and then the circumstances change and the production follows. So I think following the talent with Chris Olave was certainly something worth taking a victory lap over.
Yeah, totally agree. And like we say so many times, right, when the talent meets the volume, that's normally when you get some really good fantasy production. And six most targets per game during the season this year, and the guys ahead of them were all like the elite wideouts. And then, of course, Trey McBride, who is basically an elite wideout based on how he produced this year and how we hope that he continues to produce into the future. You could look at him like he's a top 10 fantasy receiver, even though he's playing the tight end position. Which brings us to our final category here, Harmon, of the 2025 fantasy MVP. And it's the obvious names at the top, but I do think, and this is producer Colin making sure that we're mentioning this name, I do think Trey McBride belongs in this conversation. Just an unbelievable season from him, far and away the top fantasy tight end. And this is the first time since 2022 where a fantasy tight end has averaged over 15 fantasy points per game in half PPR, over 18 fantasy points per game in PPR. An incredible year from him. The last time we saw it done in 2022 was Travis Kelce doing it. And again, I'm spoiling so much from this top 50, but Trey McBride is my 12th player. He finishes off the first round. I think he should be in that conversation. We're going to have to see what happens in Arizona in terms of the coaching staff, in terms of are they going to keep Jacoby Brissett or get someone else. So obviously things could potentially change, but what is guaranteed is that Trey McBride is a phenomenal talent. He's a guy that deserves to be that de facto number one receiver in that offense, and I would be surprised if they change that this offseason. He should continue to get a ton of volume, continue to be a great fantasy player. The only question is he going to get the kind of volume that makes him that 15 or 18 point fantasy asset, or does he fall back to the pack and end up being more that 12, 13 point guy, which is sometimes still enough to lead the position and finishes the tight end one overall. But if you're going to draft him that high, we need to be pretty confident he's going to have one of those elite seasons.
Yeah. You're not going to hear me say a bad word about Trey McBride. I think he's a great player. I also agree he does deserve to be an honorable mention in our 2025 fantasy MVP conversation. I will just say 12th overall, you're definitely like, he does need to have one of those seasons. And I think we saw this. Look, obviously Brock Bowers got hurt this year, but we saw the struggles of like typically passing games just don't run through the tight end. You know, and again, Brock Bowers, maybe that's not even a good example this year because he did have injuries and the Raiders were just a complete joke. But I say this a lot, like it's really hard for an NFL passing game to run, like a healthy NFL passing game to run through a tight end. Usually there's usually only a handful of systems that really do it. The current Cardinals coaching staff with Drew Petzing is one of those offenses. I would be pretty surprised if Petzing's the offensive coordinator there next year. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I think we're probably looking at a coaching change in Arizona. That team is so bad. I mean, we talk about them glowingly from a fantasy perspective because they've run this fantastic scam where they've got Michael Wilson going, Jacoby Brissett's been good, Trey McBride's been good. They're a horrible football team, and they have been so bad. Ever since they announced Jacoby Brissett was the starter, they have zero wins. They've been a horrible football team. So I would not be surprised if we see a coaching change there. And these conditions that have led to the Michael Wilson ascension, that have led to these bonkers Trey McBride numbers, I'm not sure that those are going to be repeated. So I don't want to say much negative about Trey McBride, but it's just a reminder that it's really hard to see these like repeated tight end elite production seasons unless you're one of those particular offenses that are going to run through a tight end like we saw with Gronk for years, like we saw with Kelce for years. And maybe McBride ends up being one of those guys, but it is just a little bit of a note of context there.
All right, so who else are you looking at? I mean, it's the obvious names, of course, but who do you want to mention for this one?
I think, again, after tonight, maybe Bijan deserves a little bit of recognition here, too. But for me, I think the three I came here with was Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who we haven't discussed yet on the show. This guy was a third-round pick and not one that a lot of people were really excited to make as a third-round pick. He ended up being absolutely incredible. Wide receiver 2 in points per game, 18.06. I think he deserves mention. I think Christian McCaffrey, who leads all flex-eligible players with 22.3 points per game. The second place is Jonathan Taylor at 20.9, who definitely fell off in the back half of the year. Not too much of a fault of his own. It just is what it is. That was a great call by you, by the way. I know you don't want a victory lap, but that was definitely a good call by you at one point this year, calling him a big-time sell near the deadline. That aged really well. But Christian McCaffrey, I think, deserves maybe to win this award. And then lastly, of course, Puka Nacua, who was the wide receiver 7 in ADP by the end of the August because of all the Matthew Stafford back scare and everything. And he obviously ended up being the most productive receiver on a per game basis.
Yeah, getting Puka in the second round in some drafts when the Stafford scare crazy stuff was happening, that was, in the moment, it felt so good. And yeah, that aged really well. But I'm with you. I think it has to go to CMC. I think this is the award that he certainly deserves. We kind of like shoehorned him into the other one. I think this is the one that is just him hands down here. So many durability questions. You know, I wasn't really listening to it. I was glad when he kept falling to me. Like you said, I think a lot of analysts were kind of doing that and getting him in the middle of the first round or so. Wasn't really letting him fall past me almost anywhere. So I was drafting him a ton. And I said this, I think, in the summer. And again, now I feel like I'm victory lapping. But I felt like he had one more big season in him. I said in the summer, I was like, I'm willing to take him in the first round confidently because I felt like he's going to dial it back up for one more big year. And then I start to have more concerns. And this year is kind of just played out to a T just like that. A ton of volume, 399 touches so far here. Great production. The guy is phenomenal. Half PPR, 22.1 fantasy points per game. That's more than Puka at 19.7. It's more than JSN at 18.5. I go by half PPR. Some people can go by full PPR. Even in full PPR, 25.1 for CMC, 23.8 for Puka, 22 for JSN. So if you're looking purely at who is producing more, like you said, the number one flex player, the guy that you wanted in your lineup week in, week out, even as everyone around him was getting injured, everyone had all the durability concerns about him, and yet he didn't get hurt this year. He played through it. He kept going. He kept producing, and he was the engine of that offense. Future Hall of Famer. Great year. Next year in the offseason, we're going to have some conversations, though, because this dude's going to be 30 years old coming off this big year. I'm a little more concerned about him, let's say, about his 2026 outlook, but still, you're going to look at him as a first round pick just because of what he showed us here, that he can produce, you know, almost a couple more points per game than the next closest flex player. Incredible. Incredible from him. We've seen him do it before, but incredible to have that year last year. It was just a lost season due to injury, and then to come back and be this for fantasy. Just hats off to him all the way.
425 opportunities this year, targets plus rush attempts for Christian McCaffrey. Bijan Robinson is second with 372. So it is just absurd the workload that he handled this year. There was all that discourse, right, about Saquon Barkley, 388 opportunities in the regular season. Obviously, Chris McCaffrey has outproduced that. The Barkley workload went on into the Super Bowl run. The Niners could make a Super Bowl run here, so I don't think there's going to be any less touches on the way here for Christian McCaffrey. And I mentioned this on the Sunday Night Football solo recap. We've had 15 seasons in which a running back has logged 420-plus intended touches. Again, that's targets plus carry since 2000. It's happened four times since 2010. Two of those four seasons were Christian McCaffrey with two different teams. It is worth noting, the next season for some of these guys didn't look all that good. We'll definitely have to research that in the offseason, including Christian McCaffrey himself, who did it in 2019 with the Panthers. If you remember, Mike Davis went over 1,000 yards from scrimmage for the 2020 Panthers, if that tells you how Christian McCaffrey's 2020 season went. So hell of a year, though, for Christian McCaffrey. None of that matters now. All that matters is I think he is definitely the favorite for fantasy football MVP. It was a hell of a year for Christian McCaffrey and Boone. It was a hell of a year for this show, man. You know, we're done now with the 5 day a week schedule. We're done with these primetime recaps. Thank you for joining me for this one and only. I don't know if we'll ever get you to do it again, but it was a pleasure to have you here. It was a pleasure to have you on the show all year. I really appreciate it. I just want to send three thank yous out. One, thank you to Boone and everybody who was involved hosting the show, but especially Boone here, who joined the team full time this year for the first season. And I can't wait to just continue to do more work with you. I want to give a huge shout out to the producers of this show as well. Obviously, I give Colin a lot of crap on the mic, but he is excellent at his job. And it pains me to say these nice things about him publicly, but he is excellent at his job. He leads it to a great team. JB is fantastic. Jason Jung is fantastic on the back end as well. Legit love working with those three guys. They're huge in everything that happens on the show. We get to come on here and be complete jackasses and talk about football, especially jackass me being the jackass number one here. But those guys put in the real work both before and after the show. So shout out to them. And of course, shout out to everybody who watches and listens to this show. it was an incredible year. If you guys won your fantasy championships, we would love to see it. Like, send that to us on social media. We would love to celebrate with you. All the credit goes to you. Don't be telling me like, I won my league because of you. No. You won your league because of you. But I am very glad that you watched or listened to this show along the way. So those three shout outs have to be made here at the end of the fantasy season.
Yeah, I mean, I echo everything you said there. Everybody that works on this show, everybody who I've encountered so far at Yahoo has just been fantastic. People in front of the camera, people behind the cameras, people doing content on the site. It's funny though, Harmon, like, I feel like we're acting like this is like the real end of something. But like I said at the top of the show, dude, like, we're recording more shows this week. This is not the end of anything. It feels like it's the end of the season, and yet it's not. But yeah, thank you to everybody. Thank you to you, dude. You've welcomed me aboard here, and you know, you're such a pro at what you do, and you've made it so easy for me to just join the show and jump on here. And we've had a ton of fun, whether it's on camera, whether it's off camera in person, getting to hang out a couple times in the summer, whether it's via text, you know, cracking jokes during games, teasing each other a little bit. So thank you to you for all that. And I will also add one more here. Thank you to our wives, because I don't know about you. Oh, I know you got a couple dogs over there. We have a few cats, and not only does my wife put up with me, you know, doing the long hours during the season, putting in all this work to produce content for my rankings and all that, she does a heck of a job making sure those cats aren't body checking the door of my office or screaming at the door of my office when we're recording shows. So I don't know if your wife has to do that with the dogs, but big thanks going out to them for sure for the hard work that they put in during the season that isn't seen by anybody.
Yeah, actually, oh my God, I can't believe it. Luckily, my wife will never watch or listen to the show ever. But yes, humiliating for me to not give her a huge shout out as well, because yes, they do put up with a lot for us during the football season. But you mentioned it, man. This is not really, it's the end of the fantasy season. It is so far and away not the end of this podcast. I don't know about you. I'm starting to get those like, hey, the season's over, so when are you going to be free? I'm like, I don't know, June. We got a lot of stuff coming up here. We're going to be doing content all throughout the playoffs. We'll obviously be doing a ton of content during free agency, and really this show really takes another level once again once we get to the draft season. So once we hit NFL Combine, it's pretty much goodbye to family. Yeah, the two dogs are in with me here. They're not usually, but they are in here with me during these solo recaps. So see you losers later as well. It's going to be a long and fun off season. I can't wait to get to it. But for now, that is going to do it for today's show on Tuesday, because yes, the show is not going anywhere. Ray Garvin joins me for a special year-end data dump as we identify 10 lessons that we learned from the 2025 fantasy football season. That is going to be live at 5 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Until then, we are out.